Okay, Habakkuk. What do you got there, Debbie? Oh, come on, Debbie. Tell me what you got.
Before any of the captivity, that verse 6.
Wait a minute. Chapter 1, verse 6, before any of the captivity.
Well, my first note was before any captivity. And then I had a note, verse 6, predicts Nebuchadnezzar's coming. And then 2 and 3.
So what does verse 6 tell you absolutely for sure?
For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs.
So what does that tell you? For absolute certain.
That they're coming.
That God is going to raise them up.
So they
haven't been raised up yet. See, it's not difficult. It's not difficult, very simple. That tells you for absolute certain that God has not raised up the Babylonian Empire yet.
Chapter 1, verse 6.
So when did God raise up the Babylonian Empire? Well, somewhere along here. I mean, the Egyptians marched north up there and fought this gigantic, famous, ancient battle at Carchemish against the Assyrians. Killed King Josiah on the way up here. On the way back down, Jehoahaz was king, and they just carried him on into captivity in Egypt and set up a puppet king called Jehoiakim, his brother. Syrians were done for, and the Babylonians were beginning to move. The Egyptians didn't move down here. The Egyptians didn't, after their conquering up here of Assyria, move on down to Babylon. They didn't have the strength. They just took care of that business to protect their trade routes here and went on back home to their kingdom. The Egyptians really never were one for great expansion. They just stayed in their place. So we know that this prophecy has to be before the Babylonians became strong, which is right about in this time period right here when the Assyrians were wiped out. God is raising up the Babylonians right here. How strong they are, I don't know.
If they took Jehoahaz, the Egyptian...
Took him to Egypt.
Jehoiakim was took by the Babylonians.
No, he died while the Babylonians were surrounding him. Jehoiachin was king 3 months, and he surrendered, and they took him into captivity. This Jehoahaz was 3 months. This Jehoiakim was 11 years. 11 years. And he rebelled against Babylon.
So somewhere between them two.
This guy was 3 months, and Zedekiah was 11 years. So it's 3 months, 11 years, 3 months, 11 years. Babylon's strong enough to come to Judah and take him captive and demand some other stuff, hostages and trophies and that kind of stuff. So we know it's before then. We know that Habakkuk, right? We know that Habakkuk is before Jehoiakim. When's the first time that God ever said he was going to raise up Babylon? Does anybody remember?
Hezekiah.
During Hezekiah. Remember when Hezekiah was sick and Babylonian messengers came and flattered him and he showed him all his treasures and God said, I'm going to send the Babylonians and take every bit of this. So I wouldn't go back any farther than Hezekiah with him. Just for that reason, but that's not a good one. What other time things do you have in Habakkuk? Look at chapter 2, verse 3. I thought this was important. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Look in chapter 1, verse 5, right before God promises to raise up the Babylonians. Behold ye among the heathen. Watch the heathen nations now, and watch and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told, though I tell you ahead of time. So, that means to me that this is so, that the idea that there could be a Babylonian empire is so remote that God said, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. You're not going to believe that I will raise up the Babylonians. So it has to be back up in time so far that nobody would even believe it.
Nobody would believe Jeremiah.
Yeah, but if you were living in Jeremiah's day and the Babylonians had wiped out Nineveh and had conquered other nations around that area and hadn't yet got to you, you could believe it when God said he was going to raise them up. He's saying that you're not going to even believe I'm going to raise up these little scrubby people. You wouldn't even believe it if I told you who I'm going to raise up.
Well, were they raised? They weren't raised up before Josiah was there.
Well, they were growing. Nebuchadnezzar was in his 19th year when he took Jerusalem.
So actually, Jeremiah started prophesying after that about Babylon.
Well, this is. I don't know about Jeremiah. Jeremiah prophesied about Babylon from the beginning. I want to stick with Habakkuk here now. Habakkuk is making a prophecy that he's telling the Israelites, you're never going to believe this. So that implies that the Chaldeans were far from becoming a great military power.
In that first chapter 1, 5, and tying it to that 2, 3,
yeah.
It looks like the same generation, though.
Well, that's a good thought, Gary. But in chapter 2, verse 3, it says it's for an appointed time. Don't think I'm not going to do it. I will work a work in your day. I missed that. I think he's talking to the people there. In your day. In your day. Well, I guess if it was in Hezekiah's time, some of them could still be alive when Babylon was raised up. Babylon was a pretty strong power. See, he was in his 19th year here, Nebuchadnezzar, and he took over the kingdom from his father, which would have been during right after Josiah. No, Nebuchadnezzar was... No, Nebuchadnezzar was pretty much a contemporary of Josiah. When he was young.
After Hezekiah.
Yeah.
And Hezekiah wasn't intimidated by the Chaldeans either, else he wouldn't have showed them all his stuff.
That's right. That's right.
He was impressed enough by them, though, to show him all his stuff.
Yeah, that's a good thought. They weren't just these scrubby desert dwellers.
No, so there was a country there, but there just wasn't a world power there.
Right.
You think that when he said, I'll work in your days, and then he said, lo, I'll raise up the Chaldeans. They don't say, I will raise them up. He says, lo, I'll raise up the Chaldeans. So maybe the fact that he raised them is the work that he's working in their day.
Well, that's true. I work in your days, I will raise up the Chaldeans. It doesn't mean they're going to be military power overnight.
Don't mean they're going to be conquering them at that time.
Right. Doesn't mean they're going to be conquering them in those days. Right. So he's not saying they're going to conquer you in your days. That's a good point. Makes you think, doesn't it? What do you have, Donna? What do you have for Habakkuk before we...
What do I think now? Or what?
What do you think now in your enlightened state?
I'm backing it up earlier. Somewhere earlier. I thought it was just before the destruction... the captivity of Judah, the destruction of the temple. But I think it's much earlier.
I think it was much earlier because right before the destruction of the temple, they were afraid of the Babylonians.
I didn't even think
so. They knew they had been raised up. What'd you have, Mark?
Just before captivity.
What do you think now? Tell me why you haven't changed your mind.
That's Marion's answer. That's not mine. I don't know what I have. I have a paper.
Lou, what'd you have?
Rise said before captivity.
Genesis?
No, I was like that. I had this bar that just before captivity, verse 6. And Then Habakkuk lived during this time. He saw all of this.
Did he?
Well, now that's what verse 1 says. The prophet did see.
No. That meant this is what he had from God. This is the vision he saw from God.
Okay, I thought he was living. Okay, I thought he lived during this time and he saw it all. Mm-hmm.
He did. He may have lived long enough to see it, but that's not what that verse is saying. All right, Cliff, what'd you have? Habakkuk. Well, that's true. But it had to be far enough before the Babylonians where nobody would believe they would come. What do you have, Bess? Did anybody here catch that? Did anybody in here catch the fact that it was so far in the future that nobody would have believed that the Babylonians would be raised up?
I do have one verse marked, though. It's 3:16.
What does it say?
When I heard, my belly trembled, my lips quivered at the voice, rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself. And this is it, that I might rest in the day of trouble. So it's kind of like it kind of reminded me of us now when we think about the things that are going to happen at the end time. It's close enough to where it makes you tremble, but yet you don't know if you're going to be. You don't know if you're going to be in it.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to rest in the day of trouble? It reminded how Psalm felt when here a few the last time she came when we were talking about Revelation and him coming on the white horses and all. She said, "Oh, I don't know if I want to live during that time or not." I felt like that's what he was saying. Ooh, I don't know if I want to live. It's so close, I can feel it, but I don't know if I want to live in that time.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
He really didn't know when it was going to happen, but he knew it was, and he didn't want to be alive then. Carol, what did you see? Before Judah's captivity. Anybody else notice any particular verses in there you want to point out? Where do you want to put him? What?
After Josiah?
Why would it be a surprise that nobody would believe that God would raise up the Chaldeans after Josiah?
After Hezekiah.
What? Okay, let's put him up here beside Nahum. Oh, we are doing so well. I'm really proud of us. Now, anybody got a problem with that? Chris, you got a problem with that?
No, I don't.
You raise your hand and tell me you don't have a problem?
I put at the time of Jeremiah and in the false prophet.
I don't think so. I think it's before then. Because during Jeremiah's day and the false prophets, Babylonia was already strong. Okay, who have I not bothered yet? Oh, you have a comment before we move on. Okay.
I think Habakkuk was after Nahum.
You think Habakkuk was after Nahum
because it says, I raise up the Chaldeans. And Nahum was prophesying the destruction of Nineveh. So I would think that...
But when Nineveh is destroyed, Babylonia is already strong. It wouldn't be unbelievable. It could be in the imagination.
I wonder if he was talking about it, if he's something you wouldn't believe just because they wouldn't ever think that God would send the Babylonians against them.
I don't think so. That's not what he's saying. I'm just going to raise them up and give them enough strength to do that. Now, they may, and it's obvious he's talking about Babylon also because of verse 11, talking about Nebuchadnezzar losing his mind.
We'll raise up. Lo, I raise. Like they're already there waiting, and he's going to raise them up. Right? Is that the way you read it?
Yeah, but it also said the vision is for an appointed time, and hold on, it's going to happen.
So what did you say there? You said before Nahum?
Oh, sometime around Nahum.
Okay.
Okay, Bess has a question, but I think she wants to whisper it. I'm going to make her yell at me. All right, Bess, go right ahead. What about it? Yeah. Talking about God conquering the Canaanites so Israel could live there to start with. All right. We're all settled up with Habakkuk. We got the last one. Malachi. The easiest one of all. Let me tell you something about what... The first time I ever did this, the first time I ever tried this was with the best Old Testament course class I ever had. They stretched me. I had to come up with things to challenge them. It was the class back in 1984 that Sister Patsy was in the first time. We got to meet her and Lou. Sheila, etc. And I came up with this for them. Because they were just pulling it out of me. And we debated Malachi a long time. And we came up with two answers, two possibilities, and neither camp would budge. And I want to see what you've got. All right. Patsy, you don't remember that, do you? I'm glad. What you got now? What's your answer now?
Before the destruction of Israel, captivity.
Before the destruction of Israel?
No, before. Yeah, before the destruction.
So you've got Malachi way up here. That was what one camp said. She didn't remember it, but she did the same thing. What do you got, Bob?
I have after the divided kingdom, but before the destruction of Israel.
Oh, that's very interesting. Oh, we're on a roll here. One camp had Malachi the earliest prophet, and one of them had him the latest. I want to say, what'd you have, Jimmy?
I had him after they rebuilt the temple, and they all went bad again.
It's amazing. Okay, after the return, here's will the real Malachi still please stand up? What'd you have, Taylor?
After the return from captivity.
Wow, here we go. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, this is 18 years ago, and my class is still in the same spot.
One for that answer there is going to be...
Oh, Jim's got it. What'd you have, Jim?
During Ezra and Nehemiah after the...
After the return? Okay, what verse?
And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? If ye offer the lame...
What verse is this? Chapter 1, verse 1-8.
Lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee? Except thy person, saith the Lord of hosts.
That was a big thing with the people that said after the captivity, because Israel really didn't have a governor like we're used to hearing about. Where's that Strong's Concordance? Did I put it back up? No, I left it out here somewhere. They had some puppet governors? When?
After they come back.
Well, he's saying after he came back. Okay, now see, Bob thinks it's a figurative use of the term. Governor of his house. Ammon was governor of the city in 1 Kings 22, which is in the time of Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab dies in 1 Kings 22. Remember when that prophet told him he saw the vision in heaven, and God said, who will go for me and deceive Ahab to be deceived? And the spirit came and said, I'll be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. Well, when God's prophet told Ahab and Jehoshaphat that, King Ahab said, take him to jail. So he was turned over to Ammon, the governor of the city. So there are governors in Israel before the captivity. To every governor in all Israel, in 2 Chronicles chapter, let's see this, 2 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 2. I don't remember that. 2 Chronicles 1, verse 2. What's that talking about? Solomon spake to all Israel, the captains of thousands and hundreds, to the judges and every governor in all of Israel. So there were governors before Ezra and Nehemiah. They weren't commonly in use. But would you, here's the question that you have to answer, Bob. And Taylor, what'd you have after the... Here's the question, Patsy and Bob. Who else had before the captivity of Israel? Before the captivity of Israel and Judah. Wow. Here's the question you have to answer. Would you have offered anything to one of the Israelite governors? Who would have brought to Ammon, for example, the governor of the city where King Ahab was, who would have offered him anything? Under what circumstances? It's possible. I'm just saying, what circumstances would you expect that to happen?
Would it be tax collection?
Tax collection is one thing that stands out. Yeah, and governors of the Persian kings would not have accepted it. Would they have even offered any cattle or any offerings or anything like that to a governor, one of Solomon's judges, for example?
I'm really confused with this. I really don't know which one it was. What about 4?
Chapter 1, verse 4?
Where it's talking about, 3. I hated Esau and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness.
Right.
Whereas Edom said, we are impoverished, but we will return. Every time Israel conquered them, they didn't take them away so that they had to return. But it said, we will return and build the desolate place.
Well, return there doesn't necessarily mean that you're in captivity. It can mean you're in such a desperate state, you have to return to your former state of prosperity.
And then later on it says, I'll send you Elijah the prophet.
What do you think, Haskell? Did you give us a third alternative?
No.
Okay. After the return from captivity, for any particular reason? Just things like that, Governor. What, Earl?
2:11.
What does 2:11 say? Judah has dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has profaned the holiness of the Lord, which he loved, and has married the daughter of a strange god. So what are you saying that's referring to?
It's saying both of them are still in the land.
Is there any reference to the people who came back from captivity as Israelites or as Israel? What do you think, Earl? Are the people who came back from captivity ever referred to by God as Israel? Hold on a second, I'll tell you. All Israel in Israel, the people of Israel, Ezra 9:1. Oh, my goodness, Israel's mentioned about 20 times in Ezra, about 15 times or more in Nehemiah. Children of Israel, people of Israel, whether they were of Israel. The children of Israel were in their places. The Lord commanded to Israel.
When he said Judah, when he refers again, chapter 1, verse 1, he's speaking just about Judah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Referring to Judah as profaning the holiness of the Lord and marrying the daughter of a strange God, they weren't that bad off then, were they?
Boy, they were that bad off at Baal Peor in the book of Numbers.
They
haven't been turned over.
That verse 1
of chapter 2. Gary agrees with that. What?
Verse 1, he does say, and now ye priest. So, I don't know.
Read verse 1 altogether.
And now, O ye priest, this is commandment is for you.
Is that chapter what?
2.
Oh, okay. So Judah has married the daughter of a strange god. Well, that happened one time when Nehemiah came back. That is certainly not the only time that God's people ever did that.
Manasseh, they would have married all kinds of strangers.
Manasseh, he would have imported them.
Yeah.
So that Manasseh was after the destruction.
Yeah, Bob, Manasseh was after the destruction of Israel.
Because that was the one that rescued him.
That's right. What?
Chapter 2, verse
what?
13.
What does it say?
And this ye have done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and with crying out, insomuch that he regardeth not the offering anymore, or receiveth it with goodwill at your hand.
So they had enough prosperity to make offerings. There wasn't a famine going on. Taylor, what'd you have?
I wrote 3 paragraphs.
Hold on. What? Go ahead and finish.
I was referring to the this you have done again.
This you have done again. Well, when is again?
I thought maybe it could be saying that they rebuilt the altar and they're doing the same thing again.
It could be, or it could be the same altar and the weeping is again. What do you think? Elijah?
What about chapter 3, verse 3 and 4?
Okay, read them. Chapter 3, verses 3 and 4.
And he shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Lord, as of days of old, as in former years.
So in days of old, there are some old days when the offering in Judah and Jerusalem was acceptable. But they're old days.
David would have been pretty old by it.
Yes, David would have been old. Solomon would have been old by the days of Hezekiah or Jotham or Uzziah. They would have been real old by the time they got back from captivity. You hear that?
The sons of Levi, Elijah just read, where was it?
3:3.
He shall purify the sons of Levi. But the sons of Levi were purified before the destruction. So if he's got to purify the sons of Levi, they had to have become unclean.
By what?
Well, they were purified after the temple was rebuilt.
Purified from what?
Strange gods.
Token?
So that they can offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness.
Purified from what so that they can do that? What polluted them?
Well, for it to be every single Levite in the whole land, I would think that it would have to be a captivity of some sort.
Eli's sons needed purifying.
And what about this?
Purify the sons of Levi. I think he's talking about the priest more than just two of them. But I'm trying to get you to say what it is they did that got them unclean. Being taken in captivity wouldn't just that have done them, but for so much. They could have kept themselves pure as pure as they could be outside of Jerusalem. Yeah, they did that, but that wouldn't. That what? What? polluted them would have caused them to do that. What, Elijah?
What about verse 2 when it says, but who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, like a pool is soaked. Whatever soap is.
Fuller's soap. Right?
It says, who shall abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand?
When did you have Malachi? Early?
Yes, I had it before Israel's destruction.
Okay, Betty Lou, get involved here.
I put that it was after the captivity of Judah, then when they rebuilt the temple, and that when the priest, after Nehemiah left, the priest started intermingling again, starting in verse 7, it says, even from the days...
In verse 7 of which book?
Of the third chapter...
Of Malachi.
Even from the days of your father, you are gone away from my ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me. They would start the same thing over again after they had rebuilt the temple. And then they didn't give the Levites the tithes, and they had to go and work for a living. So they were already starting back doing the very same things they had done before.
Well, they did that several times, didn't they, Bob?
Many times.
But I mean,
in Hezekiah's day, he had to reopen the doors of the temple. In Hezekiah's day, remember Ahaz had nailed the doors shut? Ahaz had to reinstitute people supporting the Levites so that they could live and teach the people.
Like to me, what I got out of it was he was saying, here you go again, starting the whole thing. You've done been in captivity. I punished you and did everything, and now you're starting the whole thing back over again. You're not keeping the order.
Why? But, okay. All right. What, Bob?
Just a couple of observations. I don't remember reading anything much talking about destruction, and I don't remember anything mention of other kingdoms. All you hear about is Israel and Judah. So it seems like all the other prophets that were after the captivity always referred to something having been destroyed and fixing back, or made mention of other kingdoms that were in power.
Good point.
Yeah, but I think.
Yeah, but.
I think it wasn't a lot of mention of them because I think everything was going to change. In other words, I felt like he was put out a little, like Sister Betty said. Tired, baby. I did see it. And after that, they started putting in. Then he was talking about, of course, this third chapter, I think, is talking about Jesus and really changed the priesthood. But I think he's just telling them about a way that he's so fed up with all this. It's coming down. It's going to be the it until it all changes. And he really does send Elijah before him and all that and cleanse him with the Spirit and all that things and sanctify him like that. It's going to be a whole new thing after this.
So the Old Testament ends with the prophecy of the Christ to come reform the whole thing. What do you have to say about that, Gloria? Chapter 2, verse 3.
Behold, I will crush your teeth and spread them upon your faces, and even the dung of your solemn feast, and one shall take you away with it.
What do you think about that, Jimmy?
I think it's
right. I'm going to stop your solemn feast, and I'm going to take you away with them.
No. It says, "And one shall take you away." It's talking about Babylon.
One shall take you away. Lord Gloria, you just know how to mess up everything, don't you? What'd you have, Julie?
I had before.
You had before what?
Before Israel.
Before Israel was taken captive? Wow, it's amazing. Same controversy after all these years.
So, when they talk about Elijah, you think that in one, it could be talking about him as he's not, before he's ever shown up the first time. And the second time, they're talking about when he comes back in Revelation.
No, Elijah's already been. I don't know now. Now, Bob, would you think that he's prophesying about a man named Elijah that hasn't existed yet?
Well, Elijah's going to come again.
Yeah. But I'm talking about how far back are you taking this?
Well, I have to take it after the divided kingdom.
Why?
because he separates them out.
Where?
2:11.
I'm telling you, she's on top of it just the way she was 18 years ago. What's that?
Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem.
Now, we've already seen that the people of God were called, referred to as Israel after the captivity. I would guess 40, 50 times.
Well, that would be true anywhere, though. He could make that statement that they had all built treacherously and be talking about any time.
Maybe talking about that in the wilderness wanderings.
I'm going to say Israel and Jerusalem.
Well, it mentions Israel and Jerusalem in Ezra and Nehemiah.
Them like that as they were divided.
Did it say Israel and Judah?
It says, for Judah hath profaned.
Right. Right. And?
Well, right before that, it's separated out Israel and Jerusalem, and then they clarified that by saying, for Judah hath profaned.
So they clarified it meaning that Israel and Jerusalem were all just Judah now.
No.
In other words, it wasn't that clear, right?
What do you say, Jim?
I want to read Taylor's three paragraphs in a minute.
Could still be after captivity because Judah was the last place, the last kingdom.
Yeah.
But the abomination of the priest, which to me, to sin, was to marry the heathen woman.
Yeah, that was awful.
That was the worst thing. That's what God wanted cleansed when they came back. He wanted that out. He was tired.
Yep.
An abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. They both have been committed in both places before the captivity. Now he's saying for Judah have profaned the holiness. And that's when they come back.
See, it clarifies it. Clarifies it.
God.
Here's another thing, too. When Nehemiah and them come back down, all the priests had fled back into the fields and all that already because they wouldn't pay their tithes or nothing.
Well, the same thing had happened with Hezekiah. Same thing that happened in Hezekiah's day. He had to call the Levites back to work and command the people to bring their tithes and offerings and first fruits in.
That's what I'm saying. It kept going on and on until finally he was just through with it and he was going on anyway.
That's right. That's what Malachi said, right?
That's what he said. Right.
This is really something to me that my classes will still be divided after all these years. It's amazing. Okay, Taylor, let's hear your three paragraphs.
All my points have been mentioned. Still want me to read?
Yeah, I want to hear how you got there.
Malachi lived, I'm guessing, at the very least, after the return from captivity. Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god. Chapter 1, verse 11. This sounds eerily similar to what Ezra and Nehemiah were dealing with. See Nehemiah 13:23. In those days also saw I Jews that had married wives of Ashdod and Ammon and Moab. Coupled with the fact that Malachi had this to say, will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Chapter 3, verse 8. Again, this was the same thing Nehemiah was dealing with. See Nehemiah 13:10. And I perceive that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled everyone to his field. Finally, when I consider the words of Malachi 3:1, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. It seems like these words are fitting right before Israel was to enter the 400 or so year drought of the Word of God. I remember, John, you telling us something about this before John the Baptist and Jesus arrived. If Malachi truly lived after the captivity, it would seem fitting that the Lord would send his words to his people right before they were going to enter a drought, telling them what to look for at the end of it. All these things lead me to believe that Malachi lived at the same time as Ezra and Nehemiah after the return from captivity.
Well reasoned. The only thing about that is, as we just said, there was a time in Hezekiah where his people had robbed him. What keeps sticking in my mind, I think Barbara is the one that brought it up, is this thing about the Levites. What's that verse about marrying a strange god?
2:11. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god.
Judah, yeah. That just keeps sticking to me. Because marrying the daughter of a strange god. Well, you know, Jeremiah said something about Judah has mixed, the seed of Judah being mixed. Can't remember what that verse is. Yeah, he wanted them to be, he wanted the, in, where is that, what verse is?
15
of chapter
2.
He wanted them to stay faithful to their Israelite wives so that they could keep a godly seed, keep the nation together, because that's where Jesus was going to come out of, people keeping the law. Yeah.
Verse 12, chapter 2. The Lord will cut off the man that doeth this, what we just talked about, the master and the scholar, out of the tabernacles of Jacob, plural.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't be like the two different golden calf kind of things, would it?
No, the tabernacles of Jacob would be the cities of Jacob. So he'd cut off the people from the cities of Jacob, Israel. Same thing.
Don't you think it's when the Holy Ghost comes on, they cut them, sort of drawing a line?
Well, it could be. I mean, I'm sure it has something spiritual meaning in the New Testament, but that doesn't tell us when Malachi lived.
It also happened during Jehoshaphat's time when he married the daughter of the strangers.
Yes, it did. My goodness. Whew. Judah certainly married the daughter of a strange god. When Jezebel's, where were they? Jehoshaphat. Jehoram married King Ahab in the north, his daughter, might have been Jezebel's daughter.
And Elijah hadn't come then. Was Elijah then?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Jehoshaphat was with Elisha. Elisha, when Jehoshaphat... during that time. Wow.
It just seems really strange that Malachi wouldn't be just ripped apart about the destruction of Israel.
Bob's point about no other foreign nation being mentioned. That's pretty strong there. But this thing about marrying the daughter of a strange god means more than marrying a foreigner. It really means embracing her religion. Like Baal Peor. So here we are. I'm looking for you to give me the answer. It might be on your final test. What's the right answer?
Verse 14.
Verse 14 of what chapter?
Chapter 2.
Okay, 2:14.
If you say, wherefore, because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth.
Yeah. They had dumped their Jewish wives, their first wives anyway.
Whom thou hast dealt treacherously.
Yeah.
Yet she is thy companion and the wife of thy covenant.
Right. Wife of thy covenant means in worshiping the same God, belonging to the same God, and the marriage vows made with him.
Talk about Israel and Judah.
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Whew. Third verse of chapter 2.
2:3.
We've read it before. That's spreading the dung. And one shall take you away with it.
Well, taking away the dung was the job of some of the people there in Jerusalem. And they would take it south of Jerusalem, just right out the hill, Valley of the Sons of Hinnom, and dump it. And God could have been meaning to take you and dump you out with the trash like the dung. Or take you into a foreign land.
How long, what's the time frame between them coming out of captivity and the Grecian Empire taking over after Persia?
Well, Alexander the Great died in 331 B.C.
A couple hundred years or something.
Not that long. Maybe 100. Coming out of captivity, maybe. It's hard to say because Babylon, I believe, according to the records, is 587. Does anybody have that date written down? Anyway, maybe 100 years, 150.
Would he be referring to that?
What, taking him to Babylonian captivity?
No, the Grecians coming.
Well, they never took him captive.
They didn't take him at all.
No. Alexander the Great was happy for everybody to live where they wanted to and have whatever religion they wanted to. Just speak Greek and use Greek money and let's all be one happy people. Well, the answer is let brotherly love continue. What, Wendell? How many different places? Well, from the situations that are described, we've either got him before Assyria comes and destroys Israel, which means way back here somewhere, the earliest of all the prophets, or the latest of all the prophets. And that's where we've been for many, many years now. Okay, Billy.
I think he lived in the time of Judah after Israel was carried into captivity. In the days when Judah was at its worst, as in the days of Manasseh.
Why did anybody think it was before Israel was destroyed?
Because Judah and Israel were both mentioned in verse 11.
Verse 11 of what chapter?
Chapter
2, verse 11 says what? We've read this over and over.
See, there are places in the Bible where it makes a difference between Israel and Judah, even right. When the kingdom was together.
Yeah, that's right. Even before the divided kingdom.
Right. You count that as relevant. But it has to be after the days of Elijah.
That verse in chapter 2, verse 11, certainly doesn't prove anything the way it's written, obviously. So you think it's after Israel is destroyed?
Because it only mentions Judah, except that one verse, but you really can't go by that. Take that out of it. And talk about Jerusalem, Judah, offering looted bread upon the altar, and things like that. There is one verse. I got a question for you.
Hold on a second. I'm going to see something here. That's right. Malachi 2:11 is the only mention of Israel in the whole book. But that still doesn't mean Israel's still there. God's the God of Israel, even after the captivity. Okay, I'm sorry, what's your question?
Chapter 1, verse 10. It says, who is there even among you that will shut the doors for naught? Is it talking about the doors of the temple?
Yeah. Do anything for God without pay. He's saying you're all greedy.
Looks like they'd be opening the doors rather than shutting.
Well, open or shut them is the same. Shut them at night and open them in the morning.
Like
same work, yeah. Now, what were you saying, Amy, that Jimmy said to ask me or say to me?
I was looking at chapter 4, verse 4, where it says, remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded to him, in Horeb for all Israel with the statute.
That's Israel again. Boy, Strong's Concordance missed that. That's hard to believe. Hard to believe.
Four.
I got another one after that.
I gotta look at this again. I had to. I'm about to throw it away. Israel. One time in Malachi, that's all it has. I thought I had to have looked at it wrong. Maybe that's why these things are on sale.
Josh, I think I've got the nail in the coffin.
All right, Bob, let us have it.
Chapter 1, verse 5.
What does it say?
And your eyes shall see, and ye shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel.
another one of Israel.
There was no border of Israel after the captivity, was there?
No, just wait a minute here. Every bit of information helps clarify things.
Sounds like it's a nation.
The Lord shall be glorified from the border of Israel. Let me see. Chapter 1, verse 5. Edom saith, we are in, verse 4, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build it, but I will throw it down. They shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. And your eyes shall see, and you shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel. Well, that would make the border of Israel be down there close to Edom. They'll see it from the border.
Which is the border of
Judah. I thought that didn't need to be pointed out, but obviously it did.
Well, didn't you have some Simeon was down there, wasn't it?
I want to understand why that's a nail in the coffin.
Because Israel wasn't a nation geographically after the captivity. They were given little territories, but it was never referred to as their own country.
Well, they had borders in time because it was broken up by their governors. There was a border after the captivity. Not immediately when they came back.
They're making it sound like,
but in time.
One group and not little here, little there.
Yes, it does. From Edom's perspective, they would have known their limits of their territory. What? Now, Billy's thrown a monkey wrench into the whole thing, offered us a third alternative. Okay, Gloria, let's have your other pearl you've found here.
What is chapter 2, verse 18? When shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not?
What do you say about that, Bob?
They return from doing wickedness a number of times.
Well, the word return means repent. Many times in the prophets. So we really can't tell.
Chapter 4.
Is this a nail in the coffin?
For me it is. Now, sum it all up. Chapter 4, after verse 6, mine says, the end of the Old Testament. It's got to be spot
on. He was put there for a reason.
It says it right
there in the Bible.
You got him. Well, I feel like resting my case. I don't know. Pardon me?
Do you think based on 2:17 is virtually we learn God's end, that this would be close to the very end?
Close to the very end? Let's read 2:17 out loud, Amy.
Ye have wearied the Lord with your words, yet ye say, wherein have we wearied him? When ye say, everyone that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delighteth in them, or where is the God of judgment?
When you weary the Lord, that's been a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he just don't wear out that easy.
No, he doesn't wear out that easy. It's a good thing, yeah. Oh, if I had to make a choice, I'd choose after the captivity, but there's just nothing in there that absolutely nails it down. Okay, add one more there, Gary.
Chapter 1, verse 10.
chapter 1, verse 10. What does it say?
It says, at the bottom, neither will I accept an offering at your hand. And then 11, from the rising of the sun even to the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. So God has said, it almost seems that from that point, I'm not going to accept an offering from your hand. Mm-hmm. And then, but from that point, then his name will be great among the Gentiles. That puts it after. All before, he would accept it.
No. For example, in Isaiah chapter 1, and Isaiah was with Hezekiah in Jerusalem when they were delivered. You can read it for yourself. Isaiah chapter 1. This is just one example. Isaiah chapter 1, he's speaking to the leaders of his people in Jerusalem and Judah. Hear the word of the Lord, ye rulers of Sodom. That's what he calls them. That's the kind of people they had become. Give ear to the law of our God, ye people of Gomorrah. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, saith the Lord? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts. And I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of the he-goats. When ye come to appear before me, who has required this at your hand to tread my course? Bring me no more vain oblations. Chapter 1 in Isaiah, now verse 13. Incense. And Moses required incense. Incense is an abomination to me. The new moons and Sabbaths, the calling, the meetings. Calling one meeting after another. I wish I could do away with it, and I can't. I can't away with it. It is sin. It's iniquity. Even your solemn meetings, your new moons, and your appointed feasts, my soul hates. They are a trouble unto me. I'm weary. Look at that, Wendell. He was weary back in Hezekiah's day. Maybe Uzziah. Sometimes he lived... Starting with Uzziah down to Hezekiah, could have been in here with Malachi.
Yeah, that verse sounds like he just doesn't give out.
Yep. Yeah.
He is still recruiting them.
All the way through it. Seven times in Malachi, he's saying, you're doing this. And they say, what do you mean? And then he explains it to them. And wants them to repent. Now, when look at this verse 15. When ye spread forth your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. So, sounds pretty bad right there too, doesn't it? Their worship services are sin. He's not accepting that.
Got one more.
Okay, Bob. I love it.
Chapter 1, last part of verse 14. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen. When was God feared by heathen?
Jeremiah in Lamentations, you read where he said even the heathen didn't think that this would happen to Jerusalem.
So were they looking at God as the cause of all that?
He had a reputation among the heathen. The heathen respected God more than Israel did, and Judah. They didn't think that they could take Jerusalem.
That was really the reason Solomon had so much peace, man, because all the heathen nations around him feared God so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point.
Well, that's you look at me like I was explaining something different from where you were standing, but I was explaining something good for you. I don't know if you missed it or not. It was... I was supporting your position whether you realized it or not. In Lamentations after the captivity, you know, when smoking city and all that, he said the heathen didn't even believe this could happen. So they had to believe it before it had failed.
Yeah, but when Cyrus issued the orders
Well, that's what I was saying.
And the other men came.
Oh, you were arguing for Jimmy, and I was arguing for you.
And the other men come down there. He told them everybody that didn't do it his way and everything. They had the power to tear their houses down.
Mm-hmm. That's great among the heathen. You know as much as the experts. Does anybody have a Bible that introduces each book? That tells you when it was? What does it say? What is it? Who has that? 450 B.C., that's after the captivity. What do you have there? Anybody else? 450 B.C.? The experts say after the captivity. How they narrow it down? They don't know any more than you do.
We've learned not to trust the...
I was just curious to see if there was some conflict with the commentaries. There probably is if you look hard enough. That's, like I say, if I had... I didn't say the commentaries were all bad. I said you had to know the Bible so you could use them and pick it out. That's what it sounds like. It sounds more like to me after the captivity than before, but... What, but, whoever you are, Glenn.
Although an exact thing cannot be...
Hey, listen to this, Bob. Listen. Read it again loudly. Listen.
Although an exact date cannot be established for Malachi, internal evidence can be used to deduce an appropriate date.
Aha.
Persian term for governor, Pekah, I guess that's what it is.
Pekah,
okay. 1-8, I guess, of Nehemiah or something.
Okay.
Indicates that this book was written during the Persian denomination.
No, domination. They didn't have denominations then. All right, let me look up that word, governor, in Malachi. And this will tell me if it's a different Hebrew word from the other governors of Judah and Jerusalem, such as that. We can trust this one. Was it Malachi? Well, yep, that's Ezra, starts in Ezra. Well, now, wait a minute. Well, that's Haggai. That's after the captivity. Jeremiah uses the word governor 6 times, but not that word. What?
I did a little extra research, but it's probably false.
Oh, did you?
False doctrine, but
where did you get this extra research? From the internet?
Yeah.
I thought.
But it says here.
Bob, are you ready for this?
The condition.
Read it loudly, please.
The conditions of God's people in the book of Malachi are the same as those in the book of Nehemiah. Chapter 7 to 10 of Ezra also cover the same period of time. This indicates that Malachi prophesied during the two terms that Nehemiah served as governor over the little colony of Jews who had returned from captivity.
Now, you can't trust anything like that.
I know.
Because they're going by what you know.
But I just thought it was interesting.
It is not interesting.
It wasn't interesting at all. I not, just...
I just wanted to see what the other side
of. The conditions of God's people in Malachi are the same as those in Nehemiah and Ezra, but they're also the same as during Hezekiah's time and some of the other times. That's what they're not telling you. That's why you can't trust commentaries, because they have an opinion just as you do, and you can look at the evidence and decide for yourself. Now, the use of a Persian word for governor in Malachi, that might mean something. But I don't know enough about Persian or Hebrew to tell you whether that's true or not. You can't trust anything but what's in the Bible. And if you know the history of the Old Testament, you know as much as anybody on the planet. I'm telling you, it's all guesswork beyond that. And based on somebody's opinion. What'd you say, Lou? What side were you on?
I was on the after.
After the captivity?
Because I thought they had gone back to their old ways. And that.
Well, they did. Worse than ever. Yeah.
You said yourself that they was in the same condition then that they had been many times before. And it don't really say anything
morally
about a time period or anything about captivity or whatever. So what made you decide that it was after the captivity?
Just feels like it. That flavor.
This is one thing I think of when I read this. It's the hope of the Gentiles. If the priest had done their part, no matter what this time is, we wouldn't have any chance.
Mm-hmm.
God would not have had to turn to another people.
Yeah.
So that's our hope.
What?
They didn't do what they said they would do. Because we would be lost.
Yeah. Well, we'd have to come.
But to
join
Jew,
yeah.
I mean, as far as Jesus having to come, he wouldn't have.
They turned to us because they rejected him. But no mention of any foreign nation or no threat of a captivity in a foreign land and all that. That's really a strong point.
Getting back to what Jim was saying, what would this world be like if Israel would have done right the whole time?
I've wondered about that, but what's the point? What, Gloria? Another jewel?
Well, it's right before 17. I mean, and they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall he return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not.
What about it?
I feel like that's probably talking about Revelation.
Well, I think it applies to us, don't you?
I think it does.
So that means Malachi lived when? 49. After Israel got back. Oh, boy. Yeah, Gary? Are you still going to argue your point?
Chapter 1, verse 11. When did the Lord say his name was going to be great among the Gentiles?
Well, that's the question.
Prior to? Did he say that prior to the captivity?
Oh, yeah. In the prophets. He talked about his name being glorified. Presumably. Well, now, there is a form of prophecy about the past. And there is a form of prophecy about the present. They blindfolded Jesus, and they take turns punching him in the face and say, prophesy unto us, which one hit you? And Jeremiah, during his prophecy, at one point, was prophesying about the creation of the earth. The earth was without form and void, as in Genesis and in Jeremiah. So prophecy can shoot out in any direction. It's a revelation knowledge. Well, we've done a good job. Congratulations. I've enjoyed it and learned a lot. And next 18 years later, we'll see where we are. Amen. Yay. Good job.